Welcome to the Inspiring Social Entrepreneurs Podcast. My name is Fergal Byrne. Every week, I talk to inspiring social entrepreneurs and changemakers dedicated to building a better world. Here, they tell their stories, the highs and the lows, and share what they have learned to help other social entrepreneurs and changemakers on their journey.
Social entrepreneurship, you know, it's a mashup of lots of different things. I think what we're trying to do is just give a message to young people that it's about identifying things that you're interested in, and it can be cars, it can be a mechanic, it could be a lobsterman or a truck driver, or it could be curing cancer, or it could be, the most important thing is just being honest with yourself about what you really care about, and then really having the courage to like double down on it.
We've been doing Roadtrip Nation for 12 years now, so the early days, it felt like nothing was happening, you know, and like that it was going painfully slowly, you know, and that we didn't even know where it was going to go or what we should do, or if we should go get jobs at Starbucks or whatever, you know, and but we just kind of kept hanging in there, and little tiny things kept happening.
I'm very pleased today to be able to introduce Mike Mariner. Mike set up Road Trip Nation to help students to find their own roads in life. The aim is to expose students to myriad careers and life paths they would not otherwise know about, and to help them with tools and skills they need to achieve their ambitions. To date, in partnership with the California Department of Education, the curriculum has guided over 80,000 low-income students to build their own road trip projects. Thank you very much, Mike, for taking the time to speak to us today for Inspiring Social Entrepreneurs. It's a privilege to talk to you, and I would like to get a sense really of where this all began and how you came to set up and build Road Trip Nation.
It's kind of a funny story because people always think that we had some grand vision for Road Trip Nation, you know, at the beginning, or that it was like a business plan or some type of thesis project, but it was really just me and my two buddies who were in school, and we had no idea what we wanted to do with our lives. And we realized that a lot of the tools in school don't really do a good job of helping you find your path in life. And so we thought that maybe a better approach would be to learn from real people's stories and learn from their life insights, lessons, failures, obstacles they'd overcome in terms of how they figured out what they wanted to do with their lives. So it was a really simple idea. And then we thought, let's build a road trip project and strand all those interviews together. And my buddy had an old beat up motorhome that we fixed up, you know, for a couple of months, and then we cold called people all across America. And that was really the beginning. It was just a simple road trip after graduation to try to figure out what we wanted to do with our lives. We got a little bit of publicity around that road trip. So some major American magazines like Forbes, you know, covered the trip. And then that led to a connection with an editor at Random House, the big New York book publisher. So we had the chance to write a book about our road trip after we had gotten home. And the book came out, gosh, I think it was almost 10 years ago now. It didn't sell very well at first, but then we got on some big major news shows like CNN and the Today Show and NBC, and it became the 15th best-selling book in America and around on Amazon.com. And around that time, that's when, you know, it really started to take off, and the publisher put us on the speaking tour. We went to schools all across America, and that was when we had our first epiphany for Road Trip Nation, because you know, the students there, even though the book was selling well, it wasn't enough for the students. You know, they were also in the same shoes that we were in school, doing the day-to-day thing, but still asking that bigger aspirational question, which is, what do I want to do with my life? And there were no tools or experiences in school to help kids figure that out. And so we started to think, we could tell that the students didn't want to live vicariously through our road trip. They wanted to have their own transformational experiences. And that's when we started imagining Road Trip Nation as something bigger than just a book, but something more of as a platform or a movement that could really empower students everywhere to, you know, explore what was possible for their futures. And that's what we've been building for 10 years. But those were really kind of the early roots.
Well, it sounds like the right idea at the right time. And it's a lot of serendipity, which is always good. You mentioned Random House and the press coverage and so forth. Did that just fall into place, or did somebody know somebody? Because when people are starting out like that, I mean, things have changed a lot in the last 10 years, and there's so much fragmentation and, you know, social media and so forth. Did you have special, you know, connections or so forth at the beginning, or did it just kind of fall into place?
No, we had no connections at the beginning. We were like, we were cold calling people to do interviews with, and some of these people that we had done interviews with really kind of got behind our projects, and they knew people at Forbes and said, hey, you should cover this thing, you know. And in particular, we interviewed the CEO of Barnes & Noble, Len Riggio. And, you know, I think that the Forbes writer came along, I think, because she didn't really believe that we were interviewing him. She was trying to, like, bust us or something, you know. And so, yeah, no, but we had no connection. We weren't filmmakers. We had no book deals. There was no sponsors. There was no – I mean, it was literally just some recent graduates that got this old beat-up motorhome and that broke down in every city across America. And we were under that RV fixing it up with duct tape and coat hangers. All the pipes were strung together with duct tape. You know, liquid steel was holding the gas tank together. But, you know, there was some serendipity, absolutely. You know, I mean – but it came from the people that we kind of met on the road trip, and it kind of was this slow building network effect, you know, where people would kind of hear about it, tell their friends about it, and then the Forbes article led to a connection with the book publisher, and the book publisher, you know, it was just, but it happened over a series of several years, you know.
Yes.
I tell the story in like 5 minutes, obviously, because you know, we don't have a lot of time, but. But yeah, it all, you know, we've been doing Road Trip Nation for 12 years now. So the early days, you know, it felt like nothing was happening, you know, and like that it was going painfully slowly, you know, and that we didn't even know where it was going to go or what we should do or if we should go get jobs at Starbucks or whatever, you know. And but we just kind of kept hanging in there, and little tiny things kept happening, you know.
In any project, I suppose, when, you know, I mean, even though you didn't conceptualize it necessarily as what it was going to, you know, end up being, there's always that question of, you're always asking yourself, well, am I dreaming? Is this real? And you're kind of testing the idea and just hoping you're going to get some kind of, I suppose, feedback and results that give you, you know, support for it. But so let's say take something like the Barnes & Noble CEO. What was your attitude? Say, you no background, you just, I guess, picked up the telephone. And what was your attitude? Just to keep trying, just to ring everybody? I mean, how did you go about that? Because I guess others in the same situation may start with nothing and, you know, I suppose there's some determination or some something like that gets you a bit of the way.
Yeah, I mean, I think that it was helpful that I was doing it with my two buddies, you know, so we were kind of all, it was like a support group. But, and most people said no. I mean, this was like our first grade. You know, when you're in school, you learn that like failure is a bad thing. You know, you don't want to get a D on a test or an F on a test or something, you know. But in the real world, failure was essential. You know, like we tried to interview everybody. And most people said no, but the ones that said no, because we tried for everyone and we failed probably at least half the time, a few people like Len Riggio said yes. And it was really just about trial and error, you know, and there's nothing really, there's no real secret sauce or brilliance to it, or it's just kind of trial and error and hanging in there and being able to take your licks. You
but
know?
I suppose there is a kind of a lesson there in the sense of having a big vision and heading for the top. You didn't, I mean, you could easily have interviewed, you know, and I'm sure you didn't interview a mix of people, but you could have, you know, interviewed local people or, you know, and continued at that focus. But to say, you know, to pitch your idea at a level, say, well, we want to interview some of these really, you know, big figures in corporate life, big, you know, leaders and so forth. And the people say, well, you know, what are you thinking? They're never going to say yes. But, you know, basically having that as your vision in the first place, that, you know, we will try. And, you know, if we just get one or two, that will be a result.
Yeah, you know, that's a good point. I mean, we did not set out just to interview CEOs across America. That's a big misconception, you know.
Sure.
But you're right. We did try for some of them, and we weren't really afraid to go for some people at the top of their game, you know. You know, we also interviewed lobstermen and independent bookstore owners and environmental activists and writers and artists and photographers, you know. But, you know, a few of them were some pretty interesting people, you know, that are hard to get to, you know. And we didn't let the fact that they're hard to get to kind of get in the way. We still kind of went for it. And again, like most of them said no, but you see a few on the list left over that actually said yes. And I think there was a degree of just like not being afraid of rejection, and just kind of going for it and treating them like you would treat anyone else, like the lobstermen, and treating the lobstermen like you would treat them. You know, it was just kind of like this mutual respect thing and not putting people on different pedestals. And the same thing with their assistants. Like, I remember that being one of the really keys when we were going through it, you know, was like, if you're going to book someone like the CEO of Barnes & Noble, you have to treat all the people below him like gold. just like you would treat him, you know, and just like you treat the lobsterman, you know. And I think because we were recent college grads, we didn't really have a big social hierarchy of like, oh, you're just the assistant and we're not going to talk to you. But like, that was a huge life lesson, is just treating everybody with respect and being a good human being. And then people kind of support you, you know. And one of the most powerful quotes that we heard on our road trip was from a designer in northern Vermont who started a firm that did this graphic design for Burton Snowboards and really did a lot of the early kind of creative vision for the snowboard movement. And he told us, when you magnify what you believe in, when you magnify what it is you believe in, the world will conspire to support you on your path. And I really, that was really kind of like the theme I felt like during that early period of Road Trip Nation, you know, was we just kind of magnified what we believed in. We try to treat people as human beings and people, and we're just not, hopefully we weren't overly pretentious or anything like that. And people kind of rallied around it, you know, and that was the key, you know, like I think in anything going from nothing to something and then something bigger, you know, I feel like it's not just founder driven, you know, it takes an enormous collective of human beings that are just all pushing it and supporting it and giving you a little leg up here and there. And, you know,
it stands in marked contrast to the other great kind of cliche of business, which is, you know, the danger of building a better mousetrap or a bigger mousetrap and the world will beat a path to your door. You know, that idea that, but actually this is saying it's if you've got the belief, you know, and again, talking to social entrepreneurs, you do see this, that this, they have this faith or this inner drive, something is keeping them going to reach out and to keep trying. And obviously, you know, like anything, you end up talking to seeing people who have, you know, succeeded with their ventures, and there are many who have fallen along the way and got up again as well. But it's a very good focus, that insight. At the heart of what you're doing is this sense that it makes a difference what you do with your life. Working in a job, earning a salary and doing something conventional, which on the face of it, you know, might be a successful career strategy or something that might lead you somewhere, which is what most people tend to pursue, as against something which is very different, which is really about this finding your passion and pursuing right. Your passion. So I guess just, you know, is that not just being a little bit idealistic? You know, somebody has to, wash cars and to, you know, drive buses and things.
That's the thing, is like what we've seen is we've interviewed like thousands of people over 12 years, and people don't really like pick one thing for their entire life. They don't have just one passion or one interest or one thing that they believe in. It's really about the mashup of lots of different things. And, you know, like, you know, for you, for example, you're kind of like pseudo-journalist, someone in technology, someone into social entrepreneurship, you know, it's this mashup of lots of different things, you know, and I think what we're trying to do is just give a message to young people that it's about identifying things that you're interested in, and it can be cars, it can be a mechanic, it could be a lobsterman or a truck driver, or it could be curing cancer, or it could be, the most important thing is just being honest with yourself about what you really care about, and then really having the courage to, like, double down on it, you know, and the world has changed a lot. I mean, you know, maybe 40, 50 years ago, it was more about kind of finding your one career and sticking with it forever. But, you know, the millennial generation will have an average of 15 different jobs. And, you know, it's a much more maybe less settling or much like secure environment, you know, like you might not have the pension plan and the gold watch and the retirement like all set up when you're 55, you know. But it's more fluid and more dynamic, and you can kind of define your own road and kind of create your own path because there's just lots of more elements out there. And I remember once we had the chance to interview Sir Ken Robinson, kind of like the you know, really high profile kind of education thought leader, said to us, the world has expanded just infinitely in the last 20 years. He said, for example, when I was a kid growing up in England, there was, you know, 4 TV channels to watch on your television set and maybe 2 or 3 magazines you could get from that magazine stand. And he's like, today there's like 20,000 you know, TV stations, and there's something called the internet, and there's a million magazines and a million zines and a million niches and little topics and, you know, things that have popped up within it. It's all, there's so many different kind of cracks in culture now that whatever it is you really care about, you can kind of find your little tiny space, you know, and it may not be being a super high-powered jet-flying CEO, but that's not really the point. You know, the point is, like, finding something that you really believe in. And I think the social entrepreneurship standpoint is, like, you know, find a way to make it matter for people other than yourself. You know, I think that, and you can find ways of doing that in any field. But we've heard that a lot. You know, it's like, I'm going to butcher this quote, and I can't remember who said this to us, but it was some interview along one of the road trips. He said, you know, the world, don't look at what the world needs. Look inside yourself and find something you really believe in, because the world needs people who have, like, found what I'm not remembering the quote, but.
Yeah, no, I think that's really interesting, that idea. On the face of it, it sounds like good sense. What are the obstacles, not just for young people, for anybody, I guess, on their path? What would you say are one or two of the biggest obstacles that stop people from really getting in touch with this, or not just getting in touch with it, but just making this happen?
I think it's a mix of just, like, the reality of life and, unfortunately, the sort of social circumstance you grow up in, you know, and that's where, like, that's why I like a lot of our work is focused in low-income communities. You know, we've been around for 12 years. The first 5 years, we really focused on, you know, college students and doing a TV show based on that. And then we kind of, in 2008, we were like, oh, wow. You know, we realized, like, a majority of students never even make it onto college. And, like, in America, the dropout rate was, like, 30% of the time, you know. And for African-Americans and Hispanic, the dropout rate was, like, 50%. And we just had a good, honest look in the mirror, which is, if we're building Road Trip Nation for college kids, and we're already kind of on a good path, you know, shouldn't we be bringing it to kids who, you know, need, you know, the least opportunity to, like, see what's possible for their future? And it kind of shifted our whole strategy. So I think social circumstance, unfortunately, is a huge part of it. You know, what zip code you grow up in is a huge barrier, you know? And that's where I think that's just me. That's what I'm personally passionate about, you know, but then the second one is, you know, like, regardless of zip code, is just kind of outside pressure and, or something that we call, like, noise. And we've seen this in thousands of people we've talked to about their roads in life, that one thing that makes it really hard when people are starting out on their path is they might have a sense of what they want to do, but there's so much pressure around them, whether it's from your parents to be a successful lawyer and go to law school and make mom and dad proud, or whether you're growing up in California Central Valley in a big Latino community and your older brother's in the gang. And a lot of the kids we work with, 10th grade bullies, that's when the older brothers start recruiting them for gangs. So their noise is, you know, come join this career path, you know? The noise is really kind of across class, across class systems. You can't ignore that some kids growing up have much more ready access to education and mentors and resources to help them define their path.
Yes, but as you say, if their goal is to define a path that's a conventional path that they understand, rather than something that's unfolding and is new and uncertain as far as they're concerned, it might not be so helpful either.
Yeah, you know, and there's ways. I think one thing we've seen too is that it's not about, like, not struggling and not groveling. Like, everyone we've seen has had, like, those, or has failed immensely. That's, like, a big part of everyone's stories, you know. I mean, it's not like there are Road Trip Nation interviewees when there's, like, normal people, you know, where it's like, but the real thing is, if you look at people, I'm sure if we talked about how you got your start, you didn't just, like, jump into the rose bed, you know, doing exactly what you want to do right away. People grovel around and fall flat on their face. That's certainly the story of Road Trip Nation. You know, I mean, we are producing a TV show and doing all this stuff, but, like, the first 5 years of Road Trip, like, no one was getting paid. You know, we were struggling and starving and living on people's couches and deferring student loans. And that's part of it. You know, and I think what we're trying to do is really empower this next generation to you know, understand that it is possible to identify things that you really believe in, you really care about, and you're really, truly interested in. And if you find those things, you know, you'll have more self-efficacy, you'll have more persistence, more grit, more engagement, and the chances of you kind of making it through all the ups and downs are greater because you believe in it, you know, and we only believe in it so much because we've heard it over 12 years of people telling us, because we're basically story collectors, you know, and we just now, after doing this for 12 years, we're starting to see patterns emerging in terms of how people discover their paths in life. And that is one simple, big, enormous pattern that we've seen, you know, is people having the courage to, you know, block or shed some of that noise early on and really try to discover and have opportunities to discover things they're interested in, which is why we work with our curriculum, you know, in the K-12 level, and find things that they really believe in and then explore the world scaffolded off of that framework of things that, you know, matter to them. So,
you know, that's very interesting. I think one of the things that I think is very interesting is the idea that, as you say, it failure is not a sign that you're on the wrong path, you know, and I think that's a very interesting question because there's always a balance of judgment, you know, maybe 1 year failure, you know, defined conventionally. I don't know, you know, because failure means different things. But one year of sense of failing, some projects are just bigger than others and take more to reach fruition. So I suppose that whole question of how do I know whether what I'm doing is, whether I'm going in the right direction or not. What's your advice on that question?
That's a great question. And yeah, when do you know to like stop or keep going? I don't know if I really know the answer to that. But I think that people oftentimes err too much on the side of, or at least like educators, like in a school, for example, err too much on the side of telling kids to kind of redirect courses, you know? Like, for example, I was at a big education conference last week, and I was talking to some guy, and he created this curriculum tool, whatever, and it's all about helping students to assess their strengths and weaknesses and kind of basically say, look, so if you're getting, like, a D or a C minus in, like, math or science, try going into, like, history or English, you know what I mean? And it didn't really ask the question of, are you interested in science? Maybe you should, this is what you need to do to kind of push through it. And yes, you failed at this, but it's okay, let's keep going, this is part of life. It was all about kind of redirecting away from that. And his whole perspective was, we've got to be honest with kids. You know, if they're getting a D in math or getting a C in math, let's change their path, you know? And I was like, yeah, I agree, I get it, you know? And then I walked away, and I was thinking about some people in our archive that we've talked to, and I was thinking of Craig Venter, who's the scientist who decoded the human genome. And part of his story was he said that he had a D minus in high school physics. He almost got dropped out of school. And I was just thinking, like, but he loved science. You know, he was so interested in how things worked. But his brain didn't really work in the traditional school frameworks, you know. But that's what allowed him to be such a great scientist, because he thought about things so differently. And I don't know. I've just been thinking about that lately. It's funny you asked that question, because I don't feel like I have, like, a direct answer, but I think that it is scary, you know, to think that there are kids out there who may have things they're really interested in, and they hit those bumps or they fail, you know, and schools or even in career paths, you know, at any point, and people tell them to stop or that this isn't going to work out, you know, but in fact, maybe this is just part of their trial and error and their iteration, you know. You know, I'm sure for some portion it is, okay, look, you got to be realistic. You know, you're not very good at this. But we interviewed Ira Glass as well, who's a big NPR radio host here in America.
Yeah, yeah.
And he played for us in the interview some early recordings of when he was first a radio host. And he's like, I'm sharing this with you because so you realize how bad I was when I first started and how horrible I was. and the whole lesson he was trying to share was that no matter what you do, you're going to be bad at it when you start out. That's just part of the process. It's about finding something you really believe in. He said, but I just connected with radio and telling stories, and that is what kind of got me through those early things. So.
So it is a very tricky question, I know, because you're trying to find general answers to very, you know, specific situations. Everybody's, you know, life is different, and you know, and it's such a judgment call there. But it is interesting, I suppose, that particularly in a society which just accentuates the, you know, instant kind of fame, instant, you know, everything comes very quickly. You know, I suppose there's an idea of apprenticeship and spending time, and that just understanding that that's, you know, the way things work normally, you know, that it's not an aberration for a writer, for example, that they write for 5 years, 7 years, 10 years, have, you know, many, many works rejected. But that is just the way it goes. You know, that's the process. Right. And it's something about, I think, understanding the ground rules and not feeling, I suppose, that you know, you're an anomaly, and, you know, the one that doesn't fit in at the beginning. The other thing I was interested to get a sense of, at the heart of what you're talking about, is this defining yourself and your values and your views, and really getting a sense of that. Do you think, you know, on the run of the mill kind of everyday life, that people ask themselves those questions in the right way?
Yeah, I think there's a huge gap of that type of reflection. And that's really why we're doing what we're doing. You know, I mean, right now, if you look, say you're in an education setting, right, and you're kind of asking yourself those questions, the typical kind of process is to go to a guidance counselor, go to a career center, and then they give you, like, a personality assessment test, like the Myers-Briggs test, you know, or tools like that were made really in the 1950s. It's still very post-World War II kind of aesthetic in more industrial age, you know?
Yeah.
And this was kind of Ken Robinson's whole point when we were talking to him, was like, the world has changed so much since then, but how we're expecting students to kind of find their path is still very, you know, it's still based on a different kind of era, you know,
yeah,
when it was more mechanical. But the vast, enormous difference is that the world has proliferated with so many niches and so many pathways and so many things. And yeah, I love that image of, like, when Sir Ken was growing up in England, there was 3 or 4 television channels. You know, now there's, you know, thousands, and the internet. And not only is there a TV channel, like Channel 4 in England or whatever, there's now, like, the health channel and the travel channel. There's entire, and around that, there are careers and travel magazines and travel things and travel nonprofits. And, you know, I mean, there, and now volunteerism and social enterprises and that. And, you know, it's just like, I don't think that the career exploration space or the career guidance, or however you technically want to call it, has caught up with that. That the world is, yes, it's a little more scary now because there's less security and less pension and less stuff like that, but there's also lots of opportunity and lots of places where you can really match the suite of things that matter most to you. And one of the things that we're trying, that as we get a little deeper into reflecting on, like, what we've learned in the last 20 years through all these interviews, is that people don't choose one thing and then that thing, like, forever. You know, like, it's really the mashup of lots of different things. So we have this new tool on our website that's in beta right now, which is roadtripnation.com/roadmap.
Yes.
And you should check it out. But it's like, basically what we're trying to do is we're trying to, like, replace the Myers-Briggs test with something more like this. It's not ready quite yet, but you can kind of get a feel for it. But it's based on the premise that, you know, people have lots of different interests. And, you know, say, like, you know, a sports writer for a new technology, you know, website or something. You know, someone who works there might be interested in sports, interested in technology, and interested in writing. It's not like they had to choose a career in technology, being a professional athlete, or writing. It was a mashup of those three things. And
yeah,
so
there's
an enormous amount of pressure on kids to think one-dimensionally and to be like, oh my gosh, writing. And then they're like, but I'm interested in sports too. But it's thinking about it in terms of, in different dimensions of the mashup of those things, because that's the truth. And how most people, and that's what Road Trip Nation's been doing, is like kind of assessing how people have found their roads in life. And it's so dimensional. And we're trying to get students to think that way, you know. And the roadmap is kind of like one first tool that we've developed that's, you know, free, open. We're just trying to get it out there.
Right. Yeah, very interesting. Scott Adams, Dilbert. He's American. He's very, very successful. He's an American cartoonist. I think he's the most successful selling cartoonist in the world. But I heard an interview with him, and he was talking about this. He said he's not the greatest cartoonist in the world, but he's quite good. And he's not the greatest writer in the world, but he's quite good. And he's not the greatest businessman in the world, but he's quite good. So it was an idea of, you know, that it wasn't this one special thing that distinguished him, but the fact that it was a few things in which he was, you know, interested in and quite good at.
I think that is like the future, and in terms of how people can find their roads, you know, it's not as much about, I think that's it. You know, and that requires some really deep reflection and exploration, and more stories like that that get out there into the world, I think give people a sense of hope.
How long, I mean, this question of understanding yourself, your values and your views, you know, it's not something that presumably, you know, you do in an evening. I mean, what kind of sense of that process, you know, how that process works?
Yeah, that's a great question. So our mission is to empower people to define their own roads in life. And it was very intentional, instead of saying find your roads in life, because it's one thing we've seen is that people never really find their roads, and then that's it. You know, I mean, again, maybe that was like the previous generation of I'm going to be a mailman, or, you know, but there are so many different, that's the thing, is like it's this constant state of reflection and adapting and adding different layers and just being like having more of a compass than an actual roadmap. I think you're right that it's something that you do throughout your entire life. And that's, you're kind of catching us at a time with Road Trip Nation where we're starting to really reflect on that, which is right now we're really focused on mostly high school students and high risk communities. We do have some programs happening on colleges, but we do see an enormous need for people of all ages. You know, that's kind of why we've been playing with this roadmap concept, because it's something that could be, you don't have to do it if you're in school. Anyone could do it through the web, through an app, whatever. But we see an enormous kind of, you know, need for some type of framework to help people reflect on that throughout their entire lives. So
you mentioned that this has been a journey and there's been, you know, challenging. Who or what inspires you, Mike, and what keeps you going?
I get inspired by people who have, like, built big things and, like, keep doing it. Like the co-founder of Patagonia, Yvonne Chouinard.
Yeah.
I've always wanted to interview him, but we never got an interview with him. But he's built his company. He's been running it for so long. He still does it, you know. And he built it. It's out there, but he just believes in it so much. It's like a part of who he is, you know. And So stories, you know. I mean, I guess Road Trip Nation's kind of like a reflection of us personally a little bit too. You know, we just like, I get really inspired by people's personal stories, like the story you just told me, like the Dilbert guy, you know, and I wish we, you know, I just love talking to them about their stories and people about their stories and people that just like don't retire, I guess, you know, it's like, oh, I'm just going to go play golf for the rest of my life or something like that. You know, like I get inspired by people who, like, found something that they just do till, like, they die. You know, they believe in it that much. And
absolutely. Excellent. That's wonderful. And indeed, many social entrepreneurs and impact entrepreneurs I've spoken to, when I ask them what, you know, about what inspires them, very often it's the people that they work with, and that's what gets them up in the morning, and that's what drives them, the experiencing their lives and their change in their lives. So thank you for your time, Mike.
Thank you for listening to the Inspiring Social Entrepreneur podcast. I hope you found this interview inspiring. Please make sure to visit www.inspiringsocialentrepreneurs.com and subscribe to make sure you don't miss any future podcasts.